We have come to part 28 of a reading of this occult book, and its headline is Aspects of Space. After that, the suggestions of Akork, I stood up and without haste went with him through various rooms until we came to that room of viewing apparatus. Now we are going to have the opportunity to see the earth as you desired, he said. Can you see it well from here? More or less, as I said. What distance are we from earth? Approximately 10 million of kilometers. 10 millions? Is it that you are not let me see it when we are about 500 kilometers from it? No. Because within a little time you will have to sleep until we reach the earth. But you are certain that I would not hold up? Yes, we are, because when the ship reaches a distance of 4 to 5 thousand kilometers and less, to the surface of earth, we will have to make 3 turns around it before we can land. Upon beginning these turns, the ship makes some movement similar to that made by a flat stone thrown at an angel over the surface of the water of a river. These movements still affect us, however, more to you. What a pain, I exclaimed. Then Akork sat down and instructed me to sit at his side and made me look also into an apparatus. I knew when I saw the earth from there, and also when I saw a cart in space, there I would be surprised. But this time I was more surprised still. This for two reasons. The first, because I expected to see it very big, and the second, because I had imagined I would be able to see it in very much detail, which was not the case. A cork at my side, using another apparatus, also looked and gave me explanations. Finally, what I saw from there was more or less this. Within the immense crepuscles of the infinite, I saw thousands and thousands of small stars, which in other words is nothing more and nothing less than other suns with their respective planets, and among them, however, much bigger than our sun, the earth and the moon. Between the point where we were and the earth and the sun, instead of forming a direct line, form an open V. Taking into account that the sun was in front of me, the earth was a little to the right, with its moon some more to the right of the earth still. How did the sun, the earth, and the moon and their colors appear to me? The sun was the size that one would see from here on earth in midday. However, without the brilliance which impedes our looking at it from here on earth for much time with naked eyes. The earth, yes, was a spectacular part. I saw it at a meter in size, newly with light on only one small part, almost on the side opposite the moon. What I refer to as the light part was the same aspect presented on seeing it from there on a cart. I noticed also that South America was time of night, since in the light part was an ocean and a continental coast or islands, but I was not able to discover where they were. I did not ask Akork to explain. What impedes my description with more exact detail is the beauty of Ur seen from there, and my difficulty in discerning colors. It emitted five colors. The first, I am certain, was blue, emitted from the light day part. The second, the dark part, a mixture of darkness with blue. The third was a kind of belt existing around the earth as much in the dark part as the light, this being among colors similar to blue to me. And the fourth, other belt, this however is more spacious, formed a kind of iris arc with the other. The color was similar to that emitted by a very weak electric lamp. And the fifth was seen almost at the extremities of the light part. It was like two dark scratches where, taking our position as a base, it was the part above and below on the earth, crossing the light part in a horizontal sense, giving the impression of being seen at an elevation. The moon, with the exception of seeing the mirror part light and not noticing that hazy tail, was almost identical to how I had seen it from a cart. So read the footnote here. Up to the time of this UFO abduction, no Earth human had ever seen actual images of the Earth from a distance of 10 million kilometers, and could only guess its real appearance. When we finally got our first look in 69 during the Apollo missions, we found the actual appearance to be substantially as described by Arthur Burlett in 58. There are more footnotes which I also can read. Even the need to fly a number of braking orbits around the Earth before descending to land is described by this essentially uneducated man. He also describes the probe skipping of the ship on the upper atmosphere, if not controlled properly, as mentioned by the ETs. Three of footnotes: the extraterrestrial being mentions that thousands upon thousands of these points of light seen in the viewing screen are nothing more or less than other suns with their families or planets. Four of footnotes: this time Burlett saw the Earth in the viewing screen in large presentation. The ship was approaching the dark side of the planet, with South America in night shadow at the time, and only a slim crescent of highlight on the one side, in which he could see the dim outline of a continental coast he could not recognize from his limited knowledge of our geography. Fifth footnote. Here Burlett correctly identified the actual vision colors of Earth as seen from space before we had observed it directly from space as, first, a slim blue corona above the day part, two, a dark bluish black color on the night side, three, third, a kind of bluish belt around the whole planet, and fourth, a round more distant belt of a dim glow. All subsequently reported by astronauts, photographed and videotaped since Burlett's time. That was end of part 28 then, and we continue then directly now to part 29, headline Landing. After this, we returned to the dormitory Akork said, "Well, now you will make the last leap of this voyage, and when you wake up, we will already be on Earth." "Are we going straight to the point where I'm going to disembark?" "No, before that we are going to stop at another point on Earth." "Where is this?" "Perhaps I will show you when we arrive there." "At what time of day or night are we going to arrive?" Where you will stay?" "We will land where we are going to stay some 3 hours before daybreak." "Do you, sir, know if you are going to leave me in the outskirts of the city in which I live, or some distance from there?" "As I have been informed, we will leave you some 5 kilometers from the city." "Why can't you leave me closer?" "Because the exercise you will get afoot while be will be necessary." "But despite it being late at night, I could find a car to the city." "It happens that, besides the instructions I have already given you, I must tell you also this. You must not go to any part before your house, nor speak to anyone, much less that to which you refer." "But is it that I'm not going to be ill after I disembark?" "No, you're not going to feel so ill as to impede your walk, because upon disembarking you will already have hours briefing the oxygen of Earth, since it is for that reason that we are going to land in another place first." "Are some of you gentlemen going to descend to the ground with me?" "No, none of us. You will be accompanied only by the port or your exit." "Only to the port or your exit." At this advice from him, he hurried me to go to sleep. Now that I understood the influence of the circle of light in my brain, I lent the maximum attention to see how that worked. Like a robot, I led on my back, looked toward the ceiling, but still there was no light. Now I looked questioningly at a cork. Then it touched the apparently smooth wall, and the light sprang on. Up to that moment in my life, I had never taken anesthesia, but from having heard talk from those who had taken it, my organism reacted there in the same manner. I don't know if my eyes were open or closed. I slept almost instantly in a sleep so profound that just as I had heard on awakening, I remembered nothing. When I woke up, there was an accumulation of surprises. I thought that something abnormal had happened, since in front of my bed I saw a cork and another man, but what frightened me was the suits that they were dressed in. Instead of those fussy garments, they were dressed in a kind of one-piece overall, and over their heads they had a transparent hood which covered them to their collars with a piece looking like a pencil with a rubber point right on top of the head, and a rectangular box similar to a speaker in front of the mouth. Even their hands were covered. I sat up on my bed and asked, "Why are you gentlemen in those suits so different?" Then, as if speaking inside of a can, he answered, "It is because at this moment we have already allowed the gradual penetration of the oxygen of Earth into this room." Then I gave a look around and saw that the dormitory was really closed on all sides. It is because we do not have to submit ourselves also to this period of adaption, and in this case for two times we wear these suits. I then got down from the bed, but now that I was afoot I felt something very strange in me. Instead of that greater volume that I had almost become accustomed to feeling, I passed to a thinner feeling. It seemed like my body members were of iron, so stiff and heavy that I had difficulty in moving one foot. A cork certainly knew that I was going to feel this way, as, smiling, he brought my earth clothes and made me dress in them. When I changed clothes, I felt in my pocket and found all my things in them. When I put on my pants and shoes, I had the impression that they were like my legs, two bars of iron with feet. When a cork saw that I was commencing to move myself, he went to a wall and opened a kind of window and asked, laughing, "Would you like to see where we are?" I went over to him with considerable difficulty and looked in a kind of binocular, expecting to see these fields and forests of my place, but there was nothing like that. What I saw was ice in great quantities until I was lost from sight over the horizon. What place is this? Well, it is a point somewhere on earth. But not to go too far, he wanted to close it again, because I would see that it was one of the poles of the earth. However, I did not know whether it was the south or the north. More likely the south, because they would not have landed in the north to leave me later in the south. Well, after a cork closed the window, he ordered me to sit down. I sat while they remained afoot. Then I noticed that the ship was in movement again and asked, "Is the ship being directed to where you are going to leave me?" "Yes, it is." "Will there be much delay to arrive there?" "No, within moments we will land where you are going to remain." Within a little I noticed that there was a diminishment of that noise, easily distinguished when the ship was in motion. Down on this side, can also read the footnotes. Number one, perhaps this is one reason why so many other UFO abductees have also been led out of the ET ships in places that required some walking to get home. They may have needed the exercise to bring them back to their normal realities. Footnote 2. These ETs only used environmental suits in the final phase of return, just before landing, as the atmosphere in the passenger's room was gradually being changed to Earth ambient. This was unheard of in Earth technology until we got to the Apollo missions to our moon, which took days en route. 3. The first landing was in the polar region, a place also used by the ETs from Reticulum. See UFO contact from Reticulum by Wendell Stevens and Mr. Herman. The time has now come to 19 minutes in this of this part, so we can continue on part 30 on Terra Firma. Then a cork came up to me saying, "We have come to the point of your disembarkation. We are going to leave you a few meters from the road which goes to your city." I was so emotional that I could not respond anything. He continued, "We will accompany you to the exit from the ship. I recommend that when you are standing on the ground, you go forward 10 paces without turning around. Why without turning around? Because that is the way it must be, he insisted. Then, accompanied by those two, one on each side, we went to a stair interplaced between the rooms, and while we were advancing, I, with each step, felt more stiff, till finally I felt I could not walk anymore. It was then when a clerk said, "You are going to feel a little ill, but do not worry. It will soon pass." Finally, we reached the last door, and then a clerk put his both hands on my shoulders and gave me some instructions and bid me goodbye without further ceremony. As in the times before, he pressed on something in the wall and a door opened itself to my delight. There was my beloved earth waiting for me to take the first step to touch it. The night was without moon at that time. Already released by them, I took the first step and touched the grass of the field, since it was in a field that they had left me. Reference to footnote 2 later. I took another step. I was away from the ship until I counted 5 paces of the light emitted by the ship still reaching me, but from there forward I was in complete darkness. After I counted the 10 paces recommended by a cork, I stopped and turned, expecting to see the departure of the ship, but there was nothing. There was no more any ship. I looked toward the sky, nothing, all calm. I looked towards the horizon in hope of seeing it, but I also saw nothing. Finally, seeing that I was useless to try, since it seemed to have evaporated, I confronted the darkness of the night until I accustomed my sight to it. Within a little, I saw a smooth iron fence a few steps in front of me. Still feeling like lead, I tried to reach it. And when I got there, I clasped my hands firmly on the upper wire and remained standing there for several minutes. Suddenly I saw a road a few steps beyond the fence. There from the fence and from things nearby, I recognized the location. It was some 5 kilometers to the city. Slowly I was raising one leg and was treading myself between the wires to finally pass through them. When I got to the other side, for lack of strength, I could not avoid a fall and collapsed weakly to the ground. With a heart and pulse, I felt like I was going to die. With the instinct to survive, I almost shouted for help, but then I remembered the recommendations of a clerk and desisted. There I would not gain anything by shouting, because nobody lived around there, and besides this, it was improbable for anyone to pass through there at this time of night. Almost rolling, I reached the bank of the road and, extending my legs below, I led on my back on the wet grass, but compared to how I was feeling, this was nothing. After a long time of reflection, in which I came to curse them for not having left me close to the city, I sat up and with much caution got to my feet, always with my hands braced on the bank. I continued this way for some 100 meters, stumbling over a variety of things, clutching and improvising a walking stick with which I proceed still plenty unsteady. As soon as I began advancing along the road, I began getting better. Finally, I was better, however, I was still a long way from normal. I sat down again on the bank and yawned as I sat there with the turbulence of ideas churning through my head. I resumed walking again with slow steps, however, ever more firmly. When I was halfway to the city, I heard the sound of a vehicle and saw its light about 1 kilometer behind me. My first impulse was to ask for a ride, but then I remembered the words of a cork: to not come into contact with anyone until in my house. As the vehicle got nearer, I feared being recognized and took myself away from the road until the vehicle passed. It was a Willys Jeep, one of the older ones. I didn't recognize that were in it. I continued forward to the city without encountering anybody else, despite the walk having taken about an hour. In a normal state, I would have made it in a much less time. When I reached the street of my residence, it was already daylight, and I met the first people. These were coming from church there near my house, where they recited masses, which commenced in the dark and ended at the break of a day in winter. Some people greeted me and responded in a whisper, since it seemed that I did not know any more to speak Portuguese after so many days in which I had been speaking forced German. Finally, after 8 days since the beginning of a walk of a foot of 18 kilometers, which had now been reduced to 8, I arrived at my residence. I spent days without going out of the house, with a tremendous confusion in my head, until I was cheered up a little, and took a pencil and a notebook in hand, and thus began writing this account, which I end here. Signed, Arthur Burlett. Can also read up the footnotes of this last chapter. First, we have witnessed these instructions to go forward and not look back in a number of other UFO abduction cases. The contact taking place at Mirasol, for example, UFO abduction at Mirasol, Dr. Walter K. Bühler, one can read about this in that book. Also, much of it is online, and also as audiobook on Galactic Server. Footnote 2, Bill Herman was returned from a UFO abduction in a dark field in the middle of the night, confused and disoriented, in about the same condition as Arthur Burlett in this account. It's from a book of UFO contact from Reticulum, also by Wendell Stevens. Third footnote, the witness is here going through the same slow but steady physical recovery stages that many other UFO abductees since his time have experienced.